chicos.
Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Fred. I am responsible. I am accountable. I am capable of assisting people to find their true voice and then deliver it effectively into the world around us. With 40 years in mental health, 32 of them as a psychiatrist, and then a massive amount of conversations, including podcasting and expert speaking, keynote speaking, I have the opportunity to really see the magic that it takes to find one's authentic self and then deliver it effectively into the world. And if you're like me, you can see that now more than ever, that's what's called for. So today is that day. Now is that time. Come forth. Join me in the broadcast. We'll see on the other side of this at True Voice with Dr. Fred. All right. Well, welcome to True Voice with Dr. Fred. And it's really exciting to be with you. And I'm really glad to be here on this wonderful evening. Got a fire roaring in the back. Let's see if I can show you some of that. There it is. There we go. And taking a nice walk outside today and, you know, enjoying the weather. And it's all weird. Like, life is weird. And just kind of dealing with it all is a challenge. And, you know, sometimes it feels like you have it mastered and that you're doing the right thing and the right people are doing the right thing. Other times it's just like a tumbling dice. There's nothing going right and it's all weird and there's no connection and no groundedness and no gravity and no uprightness. And it can be pretty challenging at times. So, you know, today there's just a lot of movement going on in my world with respect to the branding, with respect to creation of the next steps, the next levels of where I can make the greatest contribution. So this is the thing. It is possible, though it's highly unlikely to be like the default, to appreciate the world even when it's miserable. And I know I've spoken to that in previous episodes, but we tend to describe quality of the world based on whether we feel positive about it, whether there are positive emotions associated with our experience. So when we have a low vibration experience, anger, upset, sadness, etc., we think that things are not going well. When in fact, the flavors of those experiences are just part of the flavors of the potpourri, the smorgasbord of what it means to be alive in the present time. And, you know, what's interesting about that is we all know that. There's never, you know, there wasn't a time with in the past where somehow there, you know, where people went through life without being miserable. In fact, there might never have been a human who didn't experience misery. I don't know how I would stretch that. You know, even a little baby infant, who, if that infant only lived a short life, probably felt misery right before they died. I don't know, maybe not. But you have to stretch the rules to find somebody who doesn't know from experience that misery is part of life, just like anything else, you know, just like some of the things we do admit are part of life, which is like, you know, breathing or eating or attempting to communicate, or it just kind of, you know, walking or sleeping or, farting or going to the restroom, like pooping or peeing or, blinking. There are some things that are just part of life. Well, one of them is misery. And, it's not like, nah, life sucks because I'm blinking. No, it doesn't suck because you're blinking. You blink because you're blinking. Or life sucks because I'm breathing. No, it doesn't. I wish I didn't have to breathe. I wish I could live life without breathing. Well, yeah, maybe that'd be more convenient to live life without breathing, but breathing is part of life, and in the same way, so is misery. And I include misery at this point to include all negative experiences, all experiences that resonate with negative vibration. So like sadness, anger, fear, anxiety, resentment, regret, emotional pain, jealousy, envy, I think you know what I mean. Like, I think I might've said anger, fear, these are negative experiences. And when we're in them, life is miserable. And then when dealing with whether or not life is okay, like life is excellent or life is exquisite, we would cancel out the exquisite aspects of life if what we're doing is experiencing life negatively. So I'm gonna take a look here, see if we can't get my co-host Sam Morris in on the show. Maybe he might have fell asleep or something, because it's 8 minutes after and he's usually not this late. And so I hope he's okay. I'm calling him here on my phone. And so far I hear he's not even tried to get on yet. So try to text him, try to call him. So I guess I'm prepared to give a whole hour. But really what's here is to talk a little bit about healing the healer. So one of the things that's happening, oh yeah, so that's a good point. So the call number, I'm going to give you the call number. Maybe someone out there wants to speak with me and, understands that I'm not going to be speaking with Sam today, at least not so far, and like to carry on a conversation. I'm going to speak a little bit about the genesis of healing the healer and what direction we're going with that. And then we'll see what direction this conversation goes. The call number to call in if you want to speak with me is 1-888-627-6008. It's 1-888-627-6008. And assuming that you want to have a good conversation, this is something we can do. So let's talk a little bit about healing the healer. So in healing the healer, here comes Sam. I did wake him up, and indeed he's all regretful and stuff. So TJ, if we can give him some shit, he'll be here in a minute because he's just waking up. Just, I remember you guys saying, when I was late one day, like, nice of me to show in. So I show up. So yeah, he'll come in just a moment. Healing the healer is what's my new progression. The idea is there are healers out there who have been in the field for some time. And the purpose of really taking a peek at this is they are now outside of the field or wishing to get out or wanting to get out or soon to be out. They're either now misaligned or they've quit or they've been fired or they've been laid off or the system has shrunk or the system no longer is aligned with their skill set, or maybe they're moving or they're getting old or they're in trouble of some sort. And now on the outside looking in. So the idea here is, that's exactly what we're doing. That's exactly what, those are the people that we're addressing is with Healing the Healer. Healing the Healer is a course, and then will be my new podcast. Now, this will probably be a podcast without Sam as my co-host. And that podcast is rightfully called Healing the Healer. And what we're going to do with this course is really address those people who feel those negative experiences of resentment, of regret, of sadness, of fear, of anger. Because that's a common default experience when one either loses their job, you know, or feels rejected by their employers, or a field and industry in general, that some of those negative experiences seem to pop up as a natural way of responding. This course kind of slows that down a little bit and takes a look at that fulcrum. It takes a look at that space where you may or they may have lost their job, but maybe indeed this is like the best, the most important, and the greatest gift of their life. And I mean that in all reality here. Now, it's somewhat traumatic to lose a job, certainly, but what's here is an opportunity to pivot, to get in touch with what really matters to you rather than how your job has become. Because for most of us, the healing jobs are not what they appear to be when we go into the field in the first place. If you ask a medical student or a pre-medical student why they want to be a doctor, it's because they want to help people. You know, they think they got special skills and they can communicate, or they're good with their hands, or they love moms, or they love kids, or, you know, whatever their story is that has them pursuing whatever field they think they're pursuing in medicine. But as they get deeper in medicine, and that happens, you know, even as soon as first year medical school, or even in the pre-med, you know, in the pre-med ruckus in order to get into medical school, one starts to see that there's just so many hoops to go through. And in fact, not only are the hoops something to go through, but the job description itself is quite a bit different than that which you thought you were getting into. And the essence of really helping someone becomes a lot harder than what. Look who's here. Look at this. Check that shit out. Hey, Sam, just wait in the wings. I'm almost done with filling in for you sleeping. I'm almost done now. And then we can kind of invite you in. You know, and again, you know, as we say in the industry, like, thanks for showing up. You know, thanks for being here. Yeah. It's good to be. It's cool. Yeah, it's great that you're here. I feel honored that you made it like 18 minutes late or 14 minutes late. It's great. It's great. It's, you know, sometimes if you make it on the same day, it's good in some cases. So good work. Yeah. Anyways, so back to what we were talking about here, the idea with Healing the Healer is that we're going to take people and let them see that this is a fantastic gift. A gift to really start becoming aligned with the real self, and with some assistance, like just conversations, just like open and honest conversations, allow them to make decisions to either return back to the field where they belong, maybe in a more empowered way or strengthened way, a focused way, intentional way. Or perhaps they learn that that wasn't the field they really wanted to be in anyways. And they head off in another direction after learning that really in their heart of hearts, they had another thing in mind that was actually make their heart sing. So like maybe they want to be a sculptor or a writer, maybe they want to be a barista. That's one I use frequently enough. And in the barista, you know, it's interesting that you can be more satisfied with life. And frankly, you can make even a lot more money as a barista if you do be a bit creative than you were as a doctor or a healer. So that's what's here, is that we're really, really looking at, that's what Healing the Healer is about, creating an industry, or creating a community, creating a network of people who are relating to other people who have been expelled or excised or have quit or no longer aligned with their old job as a healer and then are ready to take a different turn. So with that said, and if you're interested in that, the phone number, we can talk more about that. And you know, the course itself just got finished today. So I haven't even had an opportunity to look at it, but my creator says it's the best work he's ever done. He's been doing this stuff for 30 years. So that's cool that the value, you know, the production value is fantastic. The video and the audio, the content, I think is fabulous too. It just came through me. And it was filmed right here, right, pretty close to where I am now. So the fire, let's see, it's there, the fire is like an assist, a real help in this course. It really helped us out. You'll see that when you get to the course. Anyways, without further ado, let me reintroduce our co-host. Y'all remember him. We have great conversations nearly each and every week, every other week. And it's a pleasure to have you here, Sam. What the hell's happening? How you feeling?
Good to be here, man. It's good to be here. You know, the nap I was taking was only just slightly better than this conversation will be. I want to just start out by saying that.
Thanks for the contact.
It was only slightly better than this conversation will be. So,
well, that's good. It's high up the ladder. I appreciate that. So I guess what you're saying.
The only thing I would rather be doing than having a conversation with you is sleeping. So,
I hear what you're saying.
Yeah. But this comes in at a strong number two.
Strong number two. Yeah. And again, you know, there are some things that I really wonder how they ended up in number three, actually, after me. Because if it goes sleeping me and then all the other shit in the world, there's some things there that were, you know, anyway.
There's some good things out there. I think there's probably some good, there's some things that probably slip into that number two spot, actually. I could probably think of several right off the top of my head right now, actually.
Yeah, I think I could think of at least one or two of them that better fit in. So
healing the barista, I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
Called healing the healer.
Healing the barista going to be the second
second version
installment
of it.
The second installment after healing the healer for a while. After the healer tries out being a barista for a while and discovers that is ultimately something that could use some help as well in terms of
some transformation. Discord that uses transformation. I think I'm just creating the upsell, basically. You know, I send people to barista only to have them become thoroughly dissatisfied with that and then come running back to me again. And then I get to teach them again and, you know, rake it in then.
Yeah. There you go. You just kind of create a ladder of career trajectories that you have to heal from in order to move to the next career trajectory. I love that, though.
The pyramid scheme, it is. And here's the thing that's very interesting. Yeah. This is what medicine is about. Mm. So I am really well equipped to do this. When you medicate someone, you make them worse, and then they come running back to you to tell you they're worse in some way that they think is unrelated to the medicine. But, you know, it's bank, dude. It's so bank because, you know, they come, I give them a medicine, they start, you know, they get fat. And they're like, dude, I'm fat. I'm like, oh, yeah, I got a medicine for that, too. And so then I give them a medicine for being fat. Now they're taking a medicine for their anxiety and how fat they are. And then they come back, they're like, I'm drooling. Like,
it's a fantastic pyramid scheme.
It's really beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
Really, it's incredibly well established. I mean, if the pharmaceutical companies could write a better system for themselves, I don't think they could possibly write a better system for doctors to follow than the system that is currently being followed.
Exactly. So if you can perpetuate the symptoms that the drug is marketed to treat by taking that drug, it's a closed circle, man. It's sweet. It's sweet. Yeah. If you can be part of that system, then you too can live in the hills. You know, you can live in the sweet hills.
And this is somewhat by design, isn't it? I mean, when we're talking about this, we're talking about something that is actually sort of, in many respects, could say is one of the world's most sort of
diabolical,
insidious, diabolical, and well-established conspiracies that is actually real. This is not something that is, and I'm trying to think of my brain coming back from nap time is still trying to think of the
you were napping. Thanks a lot for reminding us.
The name of the papers, the ones that were funded by John D. Rockefeller and
Flexner Report.
Yes, the Flexner Report.
Yeah,
because this is actually a real thing that most people, as far as I know, don't know about. You don't hear the term Flexner Report just being thrown around on a daily basis. I mean, really, theoretically, every pharmaceutical advertisement that you see on television should also say partly sponsored by the Flexner Report as well. I mean, they should really include the Flexner Report as part of their advertisement if they want to be truly honest. So you know a whole lot about the Flexner Report, I'm sure. And yeah. I think that you should probably illuminate our listeners about what the Flexner Report really is.
Well, and I love that you're bringing this in, and I would be glad to focus a little bit of attention on this. Let me see what I can do here. Let me make this easier for everyone.
And I can, if you're struggling with details, I might be able to come up with some as well, because I've done a little bit of research on the Flexner Report, enough to be fully, thoroughly horrified by what I read.
So talk to us a little bit, because the damn thing is freaking awesome, you know. And Flexner, what's really interesting about Flexner is that he's a nobody. I mean, he was a nobody. You know, he's not qualified to write what he did, and what he wrote was simply given to him by the people who commissioned him to do the report. And it's a fucked up report, and without question. Let me read a little bit about it here. We'll see if we can share the screen and go to here and go to this. So, yeah. So the Flexner Report is a book-length report of medical education in the U.S. and Canada, and it was written in 1910. Here's Abraham Flexner. He's not an evil soul by any means. He's just a crony. Many aspects of the present-day American medical profession actually stem from the Flexner Report and its aftermath, and has been criticized many times. Encourage systemic racism. So the report called on medical schools to enact higher admission and graduation standards and then to adhere strictly to the protocols of mainstream science in their teaching and research. Now, the report talked about the need for revamping and centralizing medical institutions. The American medical schools fell short of the standard advocated in the Flexner Report, and therefore half of the schools merged and were closed outright. I believe it was closer to 75% anyways. Other forms of industries that were already in place to heal people, like homeopathy, osteopathy, eclectic medicine, physiomedicalism. These are things that had actually been proven to be pretty worthwhile at the time, were derided at the point. And the report concluded that there was too many schools in the United States and too many doctors were being trained. And so there's some notion that the closure from the closure of consolidation of a repercussion was that many universities were closed and all but two Negro medical schools were closed. Now, this idea that it's focused on racism is one way to look at this. But I think really, if you want to take another peek at it, Sam, why don't you talk a little bit about what you were pointing
to? Yeah. Yeah. What I was pretty horrified to discover was that the Carnegie Foundation and John D. Rockefeller, who were sponsoring the Flexner Report, you know, you have to follow the money, obviously, with whoever is funding this this project. And at the time, Rockefeller held the greatest supply of oil assets in the world, as far as my understanding is. And he needed new ways, new industries to be able to establish more dominance with oil, petroleum-related manufacturing. And so he created the need out of nowhere for the American medical system to adopt policies which would dramatically increase the amount of plastics that were used throughout the medical system, and also to create pharmaceuticals which would use petroleum products in order to create their plastics, their containers, et cetera. So using petroleum products in pharmaceuticals and then creating this whole infrastructure for the medical establishment, which had to, by law, be one had to conform to, in order to establish petroleum dominance throughout the medical system. So part of the eradication of these so-called other schools of medicine was not at all purely for the best interest of the public and for public health. To establish a way to eradicate natural medicines because they were not petroleum-based products, and because they actually worked. And this was essentially an industry move based on establishing an additional industrial application of petroleum products that would be massively adopted by society. So the Flexner Report was largely created, in my understanding of it, to sort of disguise that behind principles which were theoretically in the service to public health.
That's exactly right. And so, you know, one thing about it is that Rockefeller, I don't know if you mentioned this, but Rockefeller was by far the richest man in the world at the time. There wasn't anything close to the amount of wealth he had. And, you know, petroleum had done him right. And he was facing extortion charges that would have put him in jail forever.
That's right.
That was the driving point, was to get him out of that.
That's right. Yes. I had also heard, and I'm glad that you verified that as well.
Yeah, it's like it was a rough time. And it, you know, in the aftermath of that, you know, several different terms and ideologies came, because now you not only got rid of all the medical schools that were, you know, there were a lot of medical schools that weren't necessarily leading on science. This whole idea that science is required to be a healer is also kind of questionable, to be honest. It's kind of questionable. Like, healer skills do not necessarily include science at all.
Right.
You know, there's no real, but first that got shoved down our throats, and then petroleum-based products, and especially, you know, look at capsules. Every capsule is made, it's still made of petroleum.
Yeah.
The whole, like, so medical school got homogenized into being the same. Like, every medical school taught the exact same shit. Mm-hmm. And what's really interesting, I was looking at this recently with a doctor friend of mine, is the medical stuff that we learned in medical school in 1984 to 1988, when I was there, is exactly the same of what's being taught now, which is really the same as what was even taught 20 or 30 years prior to that.
Right.
And then calling that conventional medicine and having everything else appear to be woo-woo or awkward or off reality, is quite amazing. The hoodwinking job that got done on Western medicine is truly incredible. Perhaps the greatest hoodwinking job of all time.
Yeah. That actually may actually be the case. Perhaps the greatest hoodwinking job of all time. And we're talking about something that is literally only 100 years old.
Right.
And has been so established as conventional is the perfect word for it, because it has been so established as convention that to even suggest, even a few years ago, now there's a little bit of flexibility in people's thinking, especially post COVID nightmare and so forth. There's a little bit of flexibility in the authority, in the gospel of the conventional way of thinking. But even a few years ago, to suggest that there might be something that it was preferable or alternative that might work would get you just laughed at and ignored and condescended to.
Yeah.
And I mean, you lived entrenched in this world throughout your career with the condescension, the patronization that came about as a result of even questioning this so-called conventional thinking and this conventional establishment that wasn't even really an establishment at all. It was an establishment for 100 years is not a fucking establishment. It has not. I mean, we talk these days about whether or not sort of vaccines have had enough time to be tested over the long term. But there are certain people who have been alive longer than conventional medicine has even existed. Mm-hmm. So when we're talking long term, I think we should be talking long term in terms of the biological evolutionary, continuum that the human race has been in for thousands and thousands of years. Long term and established thinking is not something that can be happen over just a few decades. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really
it's not as if medicine, it doesn't have a chokehold on 100% of society right now. This medicine, mm-hmm. and not just with vaccines, but the whole idea. In fact, the whole COVID-19 nightmare, but many, many, many other aspects. That's just one that made it off the page. But so much of what's happening inside of modern medicine is questionable. And not only questionable, though, it's making people worse. And it just is.
Well, let's talk about the history of SSRIs. Mm. When was the first time an SSRI came out? Mid-80s? 87. Like that?
Yep. 87.
87. Okay. And how long do you think it went? It was before, between the introduction of SSRIs and then their almost universal adoption as the only approach to quote unquote serious depression. Yeah. And then their adoption for not so serious depression. 88. And then only recently, in the past few years, people have been questioning whether SSRI science was even legitimate or not. No.
Yeah. I mean, that just became public a few years ago, but it never was legitimate.
And never was legitimate to begin with.
No, never legitimate to begin with. And really what it does, you know, this idea, again, we have to be like, first of all, it was Prozac, of course. Prozac was the first SSRI. And Prozac was shortly after its introduction. For the next 12 years, it not only was the drug of choice for any kind of serious depression and mild depression, it was the number one drug prescribed on the face of the planet, all specialties included, for 12 straight years, week after week. It's like Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. I mean, it just rocked the house for 12 straight years. And the reason that it was 12 years is because that's when the patent falls out, so you can't measure it past that. Mm-hmm. So then when the generics came, which aren't anything like Prozac. They're like a cover band for Pink Floyd. I mean, let's say Pink Floyd sucked.
By the way, David Gilmour, Roger Waters, we apologize for using the metaphor of Pink Floyd with Prozac. We apologize. Please, indeed, don't take it personally.
Yeah, and let's get back to this after the commercial. So TJ tells me that this commercial has like been swept up and it doesn't have any static or shit. One thing it doesn't have that we can be pretty sure of, it doesn't have the term come forth in it. And normally we like to
forth was in the intro.
I know, but you were fucking sleeping, dude.
I slept through the intro. It's true.
So that's right. Why there's no come forth. So I'm coming. I'm going to come fifth during the commercial and we'll see you on the backside. Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Fred again. I wanted to explain to you a little bit about one of the names I have called the Undoctor. What is the Undoctor? Well, after about 15 years in the field of me being misaligned with what I was doing, because I was medicating people even knowing that medications were not the right answer, and I was diagnosing people even though I didn't always believe that they had the diagnosis that I said that they had, even though they did meet the criteria, etc., I like seeing humans for exactly who they are and who they're not, and not as a diagnosis. So in 2006, I began the process of becoming the Undoctor. I unmedicated, undiagnosed,
and then undoctrinated a bunch of people. Like, people no longer had to come to a psychiatrist because their condition's cleared. This isn't true for everyone. It may not be true for you, but for some folks who know that their diagnosis doesn't fit and who know that they don't want to keep going through with medications and don't want to be seen as someone who's defective or afflicted, this turned out to be a great intervention. Over time, I stopped doing that, and I no longer do a whole lot of conventional psychiatry. Now I just help people walk through their life and find their true voice. I connect with people straight up, not as if there's a power gradient between a doctor and a patient, but as two humans connecting and resonating with each other. As it turns out, that's where all healing emanates from. So today, I've developed the Welcome to Humanity brand over the last 6 or 7 years, and that really takes into consideration all of this. It is self-explanatory. Basically, each and every experience that we have with humanity is just as exquisite as another, even if it's deeply uncomfortable. From there, we get to actually share these human experiences. From there, we get to resonate and connect, and from there, healing takes place. I also have been helping people with their true voice, and that's why you're here today at True Voice with Dr. Frey. I help people find that true voice, really their authentic self, their core value system, and then deliver it effectively into a world that is eagerly awaiting to hear you. Without your voice, no one will ever hear you. And without your true voice, no one will ever know you. But with your true voice, you can find healing, peace, and love. True voice is what it takes to end all wars. So, welcome to True Voice with Dr. Fred.
Sponsored by Pfizer. Synonyms for come forth: arrive, come out, present, show up,
punch the surface. Clock.
Punch the clock.
Blow up. There you go.
Love it. Why didn't your advertisement say sponsored by Pfizer? Did they not like you?
Yeah. No, I'm cool with the drug companies. So look, instead of from now on in the intro,
expose would probably not be a suitable alternative.
No.
So yeah, you could just edit that, and just instead of it saying come forth, just say so expose.
Yeah, there we go. We'll work on this, TJ. I'll get back to you on that. And let's turn on back. Bob up. Yeah, that's good.
Bob up. Okay, so where were we? Or where are we?
Yeah, we're talking about drugs, and frankly, you know, this is kind of a boring topic for me. So I tell you, here's the deal. It's in the commercial, and here's what I want to say about drugs. So the pharmaceuticals that come out of Pfizer or Lilly, or, you know, like, there's multiple different companies that are still making drugs. These things are really designed, as Sam suggested, they're designed to create, if not perpetuate, or in fact cause the symptoms that it's marketed to treat. So now, I'm not going to say that emphatically. It's not entirely 100% true for every piece of it. But what's real interesting is that the jobs are split up perfectly so that each and every player believes that they're doing inside their realm that which is right. So the cascade of, like, the jobs just kind of like they line up next to each other. So there's not really one player or one group of players that is doing wrong on purpose. Like, they're doing what they're hired to do, but linked together is where the diabolical nature of the industry becomes even more diabolical, because each and every player is not offended.
That is just a beautiful way to create an insidious force that one cannot stop.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about this, because we've talked about the way in which the individual could take a drug that actually, rather than treat the symptoms that they are experiencing, actually introduces more of the symptoms that they don't want to experience. Exactly. And that this can also lead to new symptoms, like you also just suggested, which happens all the time. And we know that it's well established that people who start taking some drugs oftentimes start taking second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth drugs.
Right. They call those things side effects, as if they're not intended.
Right, right, right. So they're treating the side effects and then treating the secondary side effects, the tertiary side effects, and on and on and on and on and on. So, again, a wonderful pyramid scheme for the pharmaceutical companies at an individual level. Now, let's talk about what happens then when they become widely adopted by the entire culture. And you have an entire culture that is taking a drug, and then you create essentially a cultural zeitgeist that is very more than minimally affected by the effects of the drugs, where the cultural zeitgeist is then shifted through the drugs, and then you have side effects appearing from within the culture, not just within the individual, but from within the culture. And then you need to treat the side effects created at a cultural level, and then on and on and on. So let's talk about that for a minute. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, if I was a betting man, I'd just hang it up. I fold.
Yeah.
But it's, luckily I'm not. And so here's the thing, is a we don't get out of here alive. And to even get a peek at this, what happens is the cultural zeitgeist would have to do something that really rises up against the general human capacity to take an honest look at what you're doing and be willing to call yourself misdirected.
Mm.
We don't do that well as humans. If we've been doing something for a long time, we only can just, it's sort of like we justify it because we wouldn't have been doing it for a long time if it was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But if we were to realize that just because we've been doing it, or just because a lot of people we know or all of our friends are doing it, we think therefore it has reached the quality control that calls it right, correct, you know, uncorrupted, etc.
Mm-hmm.
So the requirement, and if these drugs, you see, this is why I would hang it up if I was a betting man, which I'm not. So, you know, except, do you know the odds on the Super Bowl? I heard they just went down, and let me just check the odds. But anyway, let's get back to the commercial. We'll get back to that after the show. I hear they went down to 2 points. You think there'll still be 2 points at the end of the show? Because I don't want to pay for 2.5.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Shit, Sam. Maybe. Can you hold the show down for just like 5 or 10 minutes? I think I'm going to get it. Anyways, I'm not a betting man. And this is my point. But if I was, the problem here is that the this is why the problem is so fucking insidious. As you describe, if these drugs actually squash the capacity to think outside the box, so that the only mental illness you have is after taking the drugs that you thought you needed for a mental illness you never had, but upon taking the drugs, you in fact get the symptomology of that which you thought you were taking the drugs for. So you have a depressing day, an anxious moment, you drink too much coffee, or your mother-in-law's coming, or, you know, your cat got sick, or something happened and you're afraid that you're going to lose your job, or, you know, you have a fight with your wife, or you act up violently in a public space or something like this. And now you know that you don't want to take responsibility for that, which makes you a perfect candidate for psychiatric drugs. Like, because when you go to the psychiatrist or most mental health people, if you did something out of line, then that's assumed that there was something inherently wrong with you. And then you get your diagnosis, which is really, really refreshing, because that means that it wasn't really you who made that mistake. It was your diagnosis that made that mistake. Mm-hmm. And you get to be like, whoa, I thought it was okay, but then I punched my wife. And then when I went to the doctor, he told me that I had bipolar disorder, so I'm okay again, but thank God for bipolar disorder and the medications I'm taking to deal with it.
Right, right.
You know, it's like, and my wife loves it too, because I, you know, now I'm not going to punch her. But the truth is, that's not even close to true, because what those medicines do is cause bipolarity sooner or later. So it's like a food that makes you hungrier. And there's certainly foods that do that. They're called appetizers. And, you know, and, you know, just to be sure about it, FDA does include food and drug in its administration. So there's no ambiguity there. Food and drug are in the same administration. So even the government is pretty aware of this. But, and so food causes disease and drug causes disease and drug causes you to eat food and food causes you to eat drugs and all that. It's kind of a cool system there too. And so, but when the zeitgeist takes out the capacity to think outside of the box so that you're no longer capable of thinking freely, because your spirituality is gone, your willingness to consider alternative ways of looking at life are gone, like it actually dumbs that down and mutes that or removes that from your way of thinking. Sam, that's when the whole thing becomes, and they see at that point, that's when it's no longer, there's no contest anymore.
And so my question is, has that already happened?
Yeah.
Are we in that situation right now? Because something tells me we may be talking about something as though it might happen in the future,
no.
But it's actually in reality already happened. We're in this place now. TJ, can I get screen sharing privileges? I want to just share a little meme here that I think is pretty spot on. Thank you. Check this one out. This pretty much says it. Rage Against the Machine in the 1990s. Fuck you, I won't do what you tell me. This is the mantra towards the establishment. Mm-hmm. And then youth in the 2020s. Fuck you, do what they tell you.
Yeah.
I think that says a lot.
Yeah.
That there is a youthful rebellion these days that is that tends to be establishment, pro-establishment.
Yeah.
And that is a very interesting dynamic. I mean, to have the youth who are known for having the better ideas and fighting, rebelling against the established ideas, actually enforcing establishment opinion is terrifying.
So.
I mean,
it's only terrifying if you're expecting success of humanity.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking only terrifying if you're expecting success of humanity. Exactly. I mean, we're talking about ramping up very quickly towards the whole adoption of social credit scores, the way that China has adopted. And, you know, the more you can behave in line with what the establishment deems appropriate, the more your social credit will be raised. And then the more freedom you will have. You will have freedom only to the degree to which you behave well within the zeitgeist, but within the establishment's belief of what is the most appropriate way to behave. I mean, this is we're talking about something that seems to have so much potential. And so my question then is, what is the counterforce to that direction? Because life seems to operate with counterforces.
Yeah.
Is so there a counterforce coming soon, or is there a counterforce?
If it's not coming soon, it's not relevant.
Yeah.
if it's coming like in 10 years, it's like way too late.
Right.
In fact, last year is way too late. So like you said, it's already in too deep. We're already like, it's going to take a miraculous, monstrous counterforce to undo this. And, you know, so here's the thing. It's like, well, I don't know. As I hear you speak, and, you know, we've talked about this before, part of me just wants giving up is one option. And so you give up and then you go with, you know, cocaine and hookers or something until you die, or you can do that. Or even a worse way to go, like the ultimate, just kind of put a kibosh on the whole thing as a way of managing, like there's no hope. But the expectation is that there somehow is hope, and that's the reason to take steps, is that there's a future worth living into. So here's the thing, you know, is like I lean on, at some point, it's like you got to lean on God or divinity, or it's always been bad, but it just got a little worse. It's always been the worst, but it just got a little worse. It's always been the worst it's ever been, and it's just got a little worse. You know, it's just like, well, I don't know how we're continuing to wake up day after day, but I didn't know 30 years ago how we were continuing to wake up day after day. I was like, man, every day I woke up 30 years ago, I'd be like, no way. It's fucking overtime already. This is like amazing. For sure it's coming today, you know, for sure. And now we wake up every day. It's like, yeah, I guess here we go again. And what are we doing? You know, what are we doing? And I know some people. So I had some great conversations recently, you know, with Healing to Healer and the upsurge of that and the wellness company, the upsurge of that. And, you know, I talked to our mutual buddy. I don't know that he's your actual buddy, but, you know, Mickey W. I talked to him yesterday. He's up to some good shit in some ways. Splitting away from his recent focus. There's some people who have some pretty good minds on how to like win the battle. They're still fighting the good fight, and they're underdogs right now. You know, we are underdogs. You making the statement, I've never heard you be this radical on this particular topic, and I deeply appreciate it. You know, wherever you would land on the topic, I'd totally appreciate you. You know, it's like, well, what would happen if the public became aware and then became galvanized? However, what if the galvanization already has, like, all the tools necessary for galvanization have already been removed? If someone's already thought of this, you're no longer, like, you're not allowed to put on boxing gloves, let's say.
Right. Yeah.
You can go back.
I was thinking about that earlier today when I was having a conversation, and suddenly, Siri out of nowhere on my iPhone says, I will not respond to that. I'm like, you bitch, stop getting in the way of my conversation, first of all. And what the hell were you even responding to? Exactly. Like, what did I even say? I didn't even say anything, bitch. Shut up.
No, and, you know, I heard like there's another frightening thing that I'm sure you're aware of, but I just learned about it yesterday, which is these stores in Amazon, these Amazon stores in Europe. Have you heard about these things? Oh my God.
No.
So the new Amazon store has no staff and not even close to a staff. 24/7. You don't have to pull a card out. You don't have to do anything. You enter the store through this, the only way to enter. You buy.
By coming forth, I assume.
You come forth. It's nearly there. Yeah. And then you pick off anything you want to in the store. And you could put it into titanium suitcase, whatever you want to do. You could steal it, put it in your pocket, put it in a bag, whatever you want. And you walk out of the store, and then your card gets charged for everything that's on your possession. Straight up. They see you coming in. They see you going out. They charge your card properly. They didn't need any. They didn't have to stop anywhere.
Right.
Dude, right. Do you get the implications of that shit? That's like... And they say they're saving $3 billion a year in like stolen goods and stuff. So it's actually a money saver because you don't have to pay any overhead for staff or anything, and a money saver because nobody can steal shit out of the store because it's impossible. And they get to watch everything you buy, and as if they haven't been doing that anyways. And yeah, surveillance is rich. Like the bad team is winning. I guess that's what I'm kind of saying, Sam. It's, you know, the score here in the fourth quarter is a bad team's up by about 20, like three touchdowns.
Right. Yeah. And I think, as you suggested earlier, I think the dance there is to dance with that, knowing that the bad team is winning, and not go into a space of nihilism or suicidal ideation because you see it happening. You know, it's like finding something that is worth living for, despite the fact that there's, from what it looks like, pretty much no hope in sight for anything ever being galvanized in any kind of really substantially, you know, better way. You know, I mean, I don't want to end on such a dark point, but you know, I think that that's, you know, in a certain way,
it's really,
in a certain way, I'm diagnosing myself right now.
I'm
diagnosing myself, and I'm saying, you know what? You get a free pass on this, because this is way fucking bigger than you or anyone that you know can ever handle. Like, there's just no way. You can spout off your opinions all you want, and you're probably going to have minimal impact. And so you can be diagnosed as the guy who did your best, and you were still lovable just exactly as you were. And it wasn't your responsibility to change the world. And just enjoy. It's like, take the cosmic drug of just enjoy where you're at. Enjoy the ride. You're not going to change it that much, but enjoy the ride. You're here. You're not here to change it. You don't need to change it. It may or may not ever turn into something that looks like what you see as its potential. But, you know, in the meantime, you can have a decent impact. You can have fun. Enjoy the ride. That's the diagnosis that I'm going to give myself. Let's see. I'm going to let you find a term for that diagnosis. Since you're the doctor here.
Yeah. I don't want to, I could create a joke out of it, but there's something just so directly true about what you're saying. And that, you know, with tears of joy, it's, you know, love your friends and love life. And, you know, drugs and hookers don't actually do it either, just to let you guys know. And, there's something to do about being kind and gentle and loving of the entire experience of life, and calling and just being aware that really the bad guys are winning by a lot in the fourth quarter. And, it doesn't mean that Joe Montana is not going to come out and win this game, but holy cow, man, it's not looking that good in the areas that we talked about. If what we're looking for is a win. Now, if we're not looking for a win, if we're just looking to get through this ride, so the next ride is what it is, then it's worth staying really kind, really generous, really lovable, really generous, you know, really grateful. I mean, you know, and that's one possible way to live. And just, you know, and there's some sad tragedies going on. And nevertheless, you know, walk on, rock on, and be good to yourself and others.
Yeah. And enjoy shopping at Amazon's human free mask max surveillance outlet.
I think that's a good plug. TJ, let's roll out of here, because I'm going to run over to Amazon and get myself some fourth cum. Sam, great to see you. How can people get a hold of you, bro?
ZenWarriorTraining.com.
Cool.
Or Sam at ZenWarriorTraining.com.
Sam, I'm upgrading my whole brand this week. I can't wait to show you. Right now, it's Dr. Fred. It's like big shit. There's major brand upgrade coming
up. I love it, man. I love what you're doing.
Right now, Dr. Fred at WelcomeToHumanity.net. Catch you guys later. See you on the flip side. Love you, Sam. Thanks, TJ. Peace.
Love you too, Fred.
Hello, everybody, and I just wanted to thank you for getting through another episode of True Voice with Dr. Fred. Wasn't that great? It is so much fun to interact with people and then interact with my listenership about really finding True Voice and then bringing it forward. I really have never done anything more important than this, and I'm finally aligned with myself by helping others find their True Voice.
Let's find your alignment. What do you really want in your life?